Some of these enthusiastic girls, this girl here, I think if you put handcuffs on her, she'd be a mute. Thank you, Jennifer. I'm Tom Flynn. I'm an alcoholic. Man, I've had a wonderful time in Alcoholics with you guys. It has been an adventure. It's been an adventure. I didn't believe that would happen, but that's what happened. So much for my beliefs. I got to a curious part in this big book. It says we have to let go of our old ideas. Absolutely. You ever play lawyer with your sponsor? Bad thing to do. Bad thing to do. I go to Wally, my sponsor, the sixth grade Zen truck driver dropout. I'm a Hopkins man, and Wally is the most spiritually cognizant man I know. Although I put 4 years in a major seminary studying to be a Catholic priest. I always tell you that so you can see how deeply I love and respect my sponsor, Wally. He did what all good sponsors do, as far as I'm concerned. He took my trembling, fearful hand and guided it into the hand of a God of my own understanding and gently stepped back and said, now focus your attention on God, the sponsor of us all. If you get something trivia that needs handling, I'm available. Major stuff, you take the cut. And that's what I do with guys I sponsor, the ultimate sponsor of us all, the father of us all. I remember one time I did a meeting in a blue-collar area of Pittsburgh, and I talked to my sponsor about it later. An old guy came up. He must have been 40 or so. He says, you better be careful talking about God in these meetings, Tom. You're going to drive people out. So I went and called my sponsor. I thought this guy knew something. He was sober about 10 years. I was wrong. I called my sponsor and I said, and Wally said, you didn't preach, did you? I said, no, Wally. I said, I shared my experience, you know. He said, well, that's okay. That's what we do. We share our experience, you know, strength and hope. You know, well, that guy said, we're going to drive people out. You know, and I don't want to be controversial. He says, Tom, you share as honestly as you can. Don't worry about being controversial. People don't pay that much attention to you anyway. So let's not all get excited about our opinions, you know. That's all I got is an opinion. If I need right in my life, I turn to a higher power. If I want a funny opinion in my life, I just look in a mirror. It's that simple. It's nothing complicated. Nothing at all. I am an alcoholic. See? Now, I am not a problem drinker. I hear some guys come in, oh, I picked up a drink and I was an instant alcoholic. I can cry. It's so sad. Missed a lot of fun. I drank for 20-some years. About 15 of it alcoholically. You know, so about 15 of it I don't remember, you know. The arresting officer knows. I can look at my police blotter and tell you. The committing physician knows. You know, I don't know what the hell happened there. You know? I do know that after I was sober, I started to see faces on ladies that and look semi-familiar. And they gave me a look like a frown or something. It wasn't pleasant. I'll put it that way. They weren't pleased. So I thought maybe I had done something, you know. But for the grace of God, I couldn't remember. You know, just the mercy of God. It had, you know, the cloak of anonymity on those subjects has not been pulled back far enough for me to see it yet. I guess I'm not around that long. Anyway, I am not a problem drinker. I am an answer drinker. That's what I am, say. Alcohol was the problem. I mean, life was a problem. Alcohol was an answer. So that makes me an answer drinker. Now, alcohol's taken me to places that National Geographic's never seen. See, it was a trip. for me when I drink. That's the reason. I didn't drink because of all this other crap. I don't have any issues. I'm not that important. And I'm not that complicated either, you know. Well, I had issues. I was blowing things out of proportion about me. I went to my sponsor one time and said, I'm going to study the child within. He says, you ought to stay away from that, Tom. And he says, now, instead of knowing one drunk, you'll know two. And in your case, you may be contributing to the delinquency of a minor. So I sort of stay away from that kind of stuff, you know. It's okay if you like it, you know. It probably keeps you out of utter mischief. What's that, right? And I got to you guys as a result of some direct hits in my life. I didn't have any near misses. Don't do anything for me. A bullet could go past my ear a quarter inch away. I will mar the hum. What was that? C sharp. I was married for 25 years to obviously a patient woman, and she had no major character defects that I know of, except maybe poor judgment. She didn't have to pick a husband, I would put it that way. But she was really a nice, she still is a nice woman. I got a little too flip with her one night, and I always pictured her as being extremely gentle, but she did have the ability and the gumption to get outside of that character trait when necessary. Well, I used to get home at odd hours. I'm not going home again. Well, she thought they were odd hours. She was a normal person. And there she used to ask me questions. And she would not wait for an answer. She would answer the question behind the question, like getting them all in. And I couldn't hear them all, or I couldn't remember them all, but I could count them. I could do that much. So one night I got home there. And of course, she was cleaning up the dishes, and I didn't get there home in time for supper or the post-supper either. Anyway, and she was standing there with a pot in her hand. It was one of them copper pot bottoms, yeah? And she's drying the things, answering me these questions. I'm sitting down in front of her in a chair, and she has 10 of them. I got the count right. And I was a smart ass, and I said to her, well, Joyce Linda, you have asked 10 questions. And the answers are 4 yeses, 4 noes, 2 maybes, and arrange them in any order you want. She swung that pot, hit me over the top of the head with it. I saw a burst of red and then black. She knocked me out cold with the pot. Now, I had forgotten. One, she was left-handed. Bad pause. Two, I was looking at these things about this school here. See? Remind me. She was all Maryland, first base. She had a 600 batting average, so she knew how to swing. So she put me out like a light. Well, I didn't talk to her like that anymore. And I did ask her if I wanted to get smart mouth, would I have 5 minutes in order to get a football helmet to put it on? She said, just keep your mouth shut. You won't need a helmet. You know. Anyway, what I'm saying to you, she was no pushover either. She was all woman. She was all woman. And I know that I like her. She was a person to like. She had good character to her. Anyway, she must have been an adventuresome. She married me. Oh, we got divorced. I had a lot of guilt about that divorce. I come from Irish Catholic background, 1 in 9 kids. I was telling the guys here, I had a nickname. They used to call me Music. They used to say, I didn't play any music, you know. People used to say, God, you come from a big family. I said, yeah. Well, I think my parents are Catholic, and they practiced the rhythm system, so they called me music. That's what I was. Damn right. Nine. We had a hell of a big rhythm section. Anyway. I had a lot of guilt about that divorce. Now, good sponsorship and a nice step has relieved me of 90% of that guilt. I don't know where that guilt went, and I'm not in pursuit of lost guilt. If you find it, keep it. I'm done with it. I have no more use for it. I have a great sense of relief to be free from it. And anybody who's carrying any of that kind of guilt around, and I'm going to stand over here after this meeting is over, and I'll be glad to talk to you what I did. I'll be glad to share my experience with you, okay? Enough of that. Moving on. Okay. I'm divorced. Direct hit. Oh, we later became pen pals, you know. She sent me a bill. I sent her a check. That's how that goes. And it's been like that since Eve, and it's not going to change but Tuesday. So no, nobody get excited. You know, that's just the way it is. And one thing, my brother-in-law, he's a good guy. I had a big house. I made a lot of money. And had a big house, like five bedrooms, three bathrooms, and Jim Palmer and these kind of neighbors, and I was a pretty wealthy place. I made a lot of money. So I knew how to make a living, but I didn't know how to live until I got to you guys. It's not the same. Not the same at all. But he gave me this parakeet. He knew. Anyway, I had a very, very active Sunday. I got drunk, and I had two early appointments Monday, and both of them were things where I had to give some people some bad news, and that was my job. And I didn't like to do that, but I was paid to do it, and it's my responsibility. So there I am. I'm late. I'm getting out of the shower. I'm starting to shave. And Joycelyn has that parakeet flying around his big old house. She'd like to watch him fly, you know. It's her thing. Well, I'm shaving, and the parakeet flies into the bathroom and lands on my hair, which is wet. And he shits on my head. Now, I'm hungover Monday morning. I got my first two appointments are bad. You know, I don't want to do anything. So, now I got to go back in the shower and slow down. I'm late, right? I said, Joycelyn, put that bird somewhere. I don't care if you put him in the oven. I don't want him in here. And so I get my hair washed, and I get back out. I'm finishing up shaving, and I hear this, these little wings flapping down the hallway again. That's that little sucker's going to try it. I know he's like me. And the door was half open, and I'm looking in the mirror like he's shaving, and I kick the door shut like that, and it catches him as he's coming in. Door gets that little sucker. He goes down on the floor. He gives me one more, you know, and he dies. Just like that. She hears it, runs down. You murdered the bird. I'm accused of bird murder. You know, all this other crap's going on, right? Now I murdered the bird. And now she says, you got to bury the bird. You killed him. I don't want to bury no bird. I don't have time for them. So 10 minutes later, she shows up, a very proper person with a gray shoebox with black trim. Very proper person with the bird in there. And she says, you buried the bird. I said, I'll bury him on my way into work. So I'm driving into work, you know, I got electric windows in the car. And I'm going over a nice bridge over the Patapsco River. It's a nice river. I mean, ocean-going ships can come up it. So it's not like a little creek. I mean, I was reverent, you know what I mean? It was a good river, you know. And it was a nice arched bridge. Had good lines to it. So I took the passenger's window down, was like the window, and threw him out with arching. Ooh, he went all the way down and through. And I said a little prayer and went in. Now you're done, you little bastard. Anyway, That night I got home early. And she said, "Did you bury the bird, Tom?" "Yes, Joycelyn, I buried the bird." "Where'd you bury the bird, Tom?" "Joycelyn, I buried him at sea." She went, "Oh." Like that was the end of it. She was buried at sea. She was satisfied. She had closure, as they say today. Her bird was buried at sea. We had a lot of fun, she and I. But I still got divorced. That's a direct hit. A near miss is trial separation. You ain't serious yet. You know what I mean? This is a direct hit. Wave bye-byes. I helped start a company February 4th, 1950. I was quite young, with two older men. That company was very successful. I was the treasurer and vice president, not a vice president, the vice president. I owned 18% of the stock. And in my 29th year with that company, I got fired. Now, I didn't get a letter reprimanding my personnel file. That's Kleenex stuff. Here, go blow. It's not news, kid. Tom, you're a talented fella. Many a company can use a guy. You're a talent. We are no longer one of those companies, and we'd like to have your keys to 2 o'clock this afternoon. Guy says to me, "They can't do that." I said, "They did it to me." He goes, "Oh, yeah, right. I can prove they can do that." Right. Fired. That's a direct hit. Direct hit. I was an 8-year-old kid, had holes in my shoes, didn't want to go to communion next morning, Sunday morning with my class, too proud. Didn't want my classmates to see me, an 8-year-old snot-nosed kid with holes in his shoes, too proud, embarrassed. Okay. When I was 34, I could have retired. I thought lack of money was my problem. A pile of money would solve the problems. Well, I had a pile of money. Somehow or another, the problems got big. The pile got big and the problems got big. I thought we'd go the other way. Now, before I just had soul problems, now I got tax problems, I got depreciation problems, I got all kinds of problems. I was arrogant. Now, I was a very good businessman. I didn't deal with individuals. I dealt only with companies and corporations. And I learned one thing from an old German guy. The companies I competed against had much more talent, many more, better personnel, had everything superior to what I had within myself or available to me. Superior in every department. Except one. Time. And the old German guy showed me how to use time. And to make time my friend. Most people do not know how to do that. I don't either. A lot of big companies have to go through a lot of bull crap before they put a deal together to take it to a bank. And I had private financing. I saved all that time, and I could make the deal bang like that. See? But I had to be on top of everything. Well, I got arrogant when I had a lot of money, and I thought I was a super and all that shit. I wasn't. I wasn't. Even though I had good credentials, I got an academic scholarship to Johns Hopkins University before I was 17. I thought I was smart. I wasn't smart. The only reason I made a lot of money, I was excessive. When I got honest, that's what it was. If it took 50 hours, okay. 100 hours, okay. Okay. That's what it was. I knew singleness of purpose long before I got here. But my solution didn't work. So the best way I could describe the money situation was, on the way up, I was a shark, dealing with sharks. And on the way down, I was bait. That's about the size of it. And I was broke. I was so broke, you could shake me, I didn't even jingle. Didn't even jingle. I was just a silent shake. There he is. Stone broke. Came to in a big old room, about half his size, sitting in a chair, nobody else there. All of a sudden, I looked by the double doors there, glass doors, and a figure was silhouetted by the exterior lighting. It was a big person there, like linebacker person, you know. I mean, big. And as the person got closer, I said, "That can't be a woman person, not that big." I was wrong. As this person thundered closer, huh? It turned out to be a woman person. Big, not just healthy, big. I called her Mr. Nurse. Mr. Nurse came up and said, "What's your problem, Buster?" Buster, who in the heck she thinks she's talking to? And I told her what a big shot I used to be and what a fine education I had. And Mr. Nurse said that she was impressed, but not a whole lot. You know, and I told her my problem. I says, "There's no knob on my side of the door." And I thought it was an architectural oversight, you know. And Mr. Nurse didn't think so. See, she didn't think it was an architectural oversight at all. And she was bigger than me. She had all the keys. And the subject matter did not seem to be open for discussion. That's a direct hit. She says, "You're nuts." She skipped the child within, just like Wally, and got right to the point. She says, "You're nuts." Now, I was relieved. I thought I should have been embarrassed to be told I was nuts. But I wasn't. I was relieved. At least I didn't have to pretend anymore. You know? And I thought, well, as long as I'm nuts, I may as well have some fun. So I would stay in, like, in the hall, and some guy say, "What's your name?" "Oh, I don't know. See that desk down there? They're in charge of names." Or I'll stand next to a window. "Where's the window?" "I don't know. I'm not an architect." I had a lot of fun with it. You know. So long I pretended in those things. I didn't know what a burden. And here I pretended not to know things I did know. Just reversed it and had some fun with it. That's all I did. I'm the kind of a guy, I could have some fun by myself in a phone booth with the wires cut. Yeah, I can. I can have fun that way. It's how I see things. That's right. It's not what it is. It's how I see things. See? Some people will tell a guy to go to hell and he'll want to punch him. I'm the kind of a guy, I could tell a guy to go to hell and he'll run home and pack. Because there's no malice in me. You know? The steps will remove malice. I don't have to, I don't want to or have to get even with anybody. You know? I don't want to or have to. Why? Because of your steps. So, these are outside things. There's some inside things that heal a little more slowly. I remember at the end of the marriage, talking to a classy woman, long after argument and discussion were over. And nothing was said, but damn, it was noisy. I just looked at her eyes, and I'd just broken the last solemn promise, and her eyes just missed it over. And that mist was so loud, how could you? And my answer was, I don't know. And the dagger plunged in my heart was given such a violent twist by my guilt. I was paralyzed from taking any action. And I was stunned in the silence. And in that condition, I made a plea. Dying men don't pray, they plead. I made a plea to a God I neither believed in nor trusted. And I broke that promise too. And that's the measure of my shame. Some of you women have some sharpened insight into shame, so you know what I'm talking about. It's somewhat deeper than guilt. Haven't had both, I know. I got to you guys August 14th, 1980. I was divorced, fired, broke, nuts, crushed by guilt, shredded by shame, laying on the sidewalk of life, and I rolled off into the gutter. That's the condition I was in. If you're an alcoholic and wishes to recover, the greatest gift I can wish upon you is the gift of desperation. There's an old American saying that necessity may well be the mother of invention. And I believe that desperation is the father of willingness. This is what I believe. So I would wish you desperation. Willingness will follow soon. That's what happened to me, and I can only share what happened to me. So I was there, finally. Came in Alcoholics Anonymous in that condition. Okay. There's a guy standing up here. I'm 3 days out of the nut house. I'm now taking a residence in a low rent district. I'm living under the last bridge you cross over before going into historic Fort McHenry. Low rent district. Got to be careful living under bridges. Always get close to the roadbed. And I was under a double decker bridge, so always go top shelf, because even on dry days, there's some alcoholics sleeping there too, and they may have careless plumbing problems, so you always go top shelf. It's just a little bridge etiquette. Anyway, that's where I'm living. Right? Some guys up here, yeah, I'm sober 5 years. And you hear a lot of this. Life sucks. I'm hanging in there. My wife is a bitch. My boss is a jerk. And I'm only the only good driver in Massachusetts. And if you want what I have, and I'm 3 days out of the nut house looking at him, I don't want what he has. What, I got to come here 5 years to be miserable? What, I'm going to take lessons in misery? I had enough. I didn't want what he had. He didn't want what he had. You offered him recovery. And he settled for sobriety only. I had a bad case of sobriety. Went and talked to the bartender. I had a bad case of sobriety. Hank, how long are you sober, Tom? Months. Whoa, yeah, you got here, have a double shot. I'll take care of a bad case of sobriety. Come to AA. I heard Bridget talking about it. She was right. She came at it from a different direction. I stopped drinking. Everybody that loved me told me, Tommy, you're all right. Business associates had money invested with my company. They wanted us to. They were praying for me. Right? Stop drinking, Tom, or cut down. You're going to be all right. I cut down. I was not all right. Stop drinking, Tom. I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. I'm in Maryland. There's nothing wrong with this damn state. I'm going to go to Florida. I saw them real old guys, them big cars driving that. God damn, they got on my nerves. Jesus Christ, man. Park the thing, you know. So I'm going to get out of this Florida place. I'm going to go to Texas, see some real guys, you know. And I ran into a bunch of guys. They were sort of effeminate, like artist type and all, you know, that shit. And it's okay. I appreciate art. In a way. But not in the bar I was in. Anyway, I left Texas. I'm going to go to San Francisco. And the food was overpriced and wasn't, you know. Wound up to Seattle. This is during Lent. I'm not drinking for Lent. I'm going to get brownie points with God. Who, you know, so. It rained in Seattle, and I got drunk Easter Monday in the Palmer House in Chicago. So much for not drinking. So when I read it in our big book, you know, restless, irritable, and discontent, it was a lot more than words. It was a shared experience. That's what sobriety will give an alcoholic. There are people who come to us who are not alcoholics. They do not have to do the steps. They have no spiritual illness due to alcoholism. They may have it due to something else. I don't know that. But there are people who come here. I have guys, one guy in my group. I'm going to take his inventory. I take it in front of him. I can take it behind him. It's all right. You know, I sponsor him. He is just an asshole. That's all. Now, in his workplace, nobody will talk to him because he's an asshole. His wife won't talk to him. She's had all she can take of assholeitis. So she can't pay attention. The only place he knows where people have to talk to him is AA. And that's the reason he's in AA. He's lonesome, and we got to talk to an asshole. You know, you talk to me, don't you? I just proved it. I don't hold myself different, okay? But all who come to AA are not alcoholics. See? And that's okay. But the danger is they pass that message, oh, yeah, I've been here 10 years. I don't have to take any steps. And they're saying it to a new guy who is an alcoholic, and they're putting his life in danger. That's the way. Other than that, I don't care what anybody says. It's their business. I'm old enough, you know, to mind my own business, and I don't have much business to mind. It's that simple. I'm not much about my business. There is a business that I'm about, but it's not mine. All right. I get a sponsor. Easy way to find a sponsor. I had to find the man who had what I want. Old-timer told me that. This guy was happy to be sober, and he was very uncool. He actually told his face about it. I'm trying to be cool when I'm new, and the guy, Dudley, walks up. You happy to be sober, Tom? Yeah, Dudley is really a lot good. He said, why don't you tell your face about it? That's what he tells me. He's a new guy coming through that door. My sponsor says to me, I'm sober about less than 4 months. He says, I told you to get over by that door and get a new man. You're in the middle of this room, lollygagging with your friends. Well, Wally, I'm not qualified. He says, I know that. And you know that. But he don't know that. Get your ass over there. Now, when you go over and you're going to try to help a guy and you're not qualified, you'll get on your knees that night, won't you? Oh, Lord, you got me in over my head. You'll be in your book that day, won't you? Yes, and you'll be talking to your sponsor about what this guy needs. That will make you use every tool in Alcoholics Anonymous. It'll make you use your group, your sponsor, your book, your close friends, your knees, your God, everything. Why? Because you're trying to save his or her ass. And you know you ain't qualified. Isn't that neat? I have, in 27 years, been, I think, 7 days without a new man. That's all. It has been so long since I had a bad day, I cannot even tell you in what decade it happened. I don't know. Maybe I'm just too dumb. Maybe I'm having some bad days and just too dumb to know it. Well, Lord, keep me in the dark. I like it here. I see they're real bright guys. You ever notice some bright guys and bright girls that know everything? You ever notice? God, they're tense, ain't they? I'm afraid to shake their hand. I'll break them or something. You know, I may be a lot of things, but tense ain't one of them. I'm not. I'm relaxed. Why? I'd rather be relaxed in the way I am among you who love me than be right among those who wish to study me. Say, you let me be me. That's very relaxing. You know, it's like standing next to the wind and telling a guy he ain't an architect. That's very relaxing. That's how it is with me. I got a higher power. I call him God for three reasons. One, my sponsor calls his higher power God. Two, it's pretty easy to remember, you know. It's not difficult to spell. So that's the reason. That's the end of my theology. That's all I have to do is have that kind of a God. Went to Wally. Wally, why do I feel guilty? And I thought it was going to give me a long theological explanation. He says, Tom, you feel guilty because you're guilty. Good.
Oh, yeah. You feel guilty because you're guilty.
Oh, imagine that. Zen truck driver strikes again. You know what surrender is? He says, Tom, we're going to read 2 pages of the big book every day. Surrender ain't like Pearl Harbor. These guys out there, I'm important. Yeah, I surrender my ego. You know what surrender is? Okay, Wally. It's an agreement to follow directions without knowing the outcome. That's what surrender is. Ain't no bombs or destruction. It's a whole new road that opens up. Oh, I want to stay on the old road. Well, wasn't the old road for you the road to the nut house, Tom? Yeah, but I sort of liked it there. Well, I did. I sort of liked it in that house. You know? I really did. So, I find after that, I like it just about anywhere I am. Yeah, that's really, you can't live that way. Let me get to it quickly for you. I thought I was all theory. I come to believe that. Questioning myself as you question yourself. Same way. A little uncomfortable before you start the questions. Yeah, me too. Tom, you got these principles. Love of God first, and the love of his kids second. See? It's none of your business what other people think about you. They're too busy thinking about themselves anyway. So you don't worry about any of that crap. Can you live by these principles in a commercial world? There's the question. Can you live? So the company that fired me hired me back. They went through a couple other operating officers and all that. And I was good at what I did. I was excessive, but I was good. And I didn't want to do the kind of a hustle I did before. So I quit that company, didn't retire, at age 57, and started a brand new company. I got testosterone. Most guys are looking for a rocking chair, and I'm looking for a rocket trip. That's the difference. You know, they're looking for chicken shit, and I'm looking for chicken salad. We just see it different. What did I do? I founded a brand new company. And I based the company structure on the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. You can't do that, Tom, in a commercial. Let me tell you something, where the idea came from. I would like to say it floated down with the angels, but it didn't. You know, nothing came to me that way. I looked at Alcoholics Anonymous and looked at their financial report. And at that time, our total budget was $6 million. And at that time, we claimed to have about 2 million members in 130 countries. So I just did the simple math. AA finds it pretty easy, and I've always found it pretty easy to contact AA members, at least in the continental United States. And I travel most of it. Easy, wasn't hard. And they could do this job for less than $2 per year per member. That's efficient. That's what I knew. You know, if I structured a company along efficient lines, it would keep the cost down. I didn't know what the income would be, but I knew that the cost would be minimal. So I had a good shot. So spiritual ideas are always not highfalutin. We'd like to think of them that way, you know, but it's not. They're very pragmatic. What happened? That company is now 19 years old. I wanted to keep it real small. We're now doing business in Maryland, Virginia, Delaware, and Pennsylvania. I have 4 alcoholics that work for me, all in recovery, all. And our total advertising budget in 19 years is still under $1. That's what I'm here to report to you. Yes, the answer to the question is you can live by spiritual principles in a commercial world. That's my experience. Take from it what you want. That's your business. I'm too old to mind your business. It's that simple. It's that simple. So it's not pie in the sky. You know? I'm not about my business. God lets me have his business. Mainly to put gas in my car to go get his kids who don't have a license yet and probably shouldn't. That's where that's at. I'm about his business. Well, aren't you afraid of God, Tom? Some of the shit you did. Did you do adultery and embezzlement and all? Yes, I did. You just come out and say it? Well, I used to say fooling around. Maybe it looked that way to her, but I was serious. Adultery's adultery. You too. I thought you might know. No. God doesn't hold that against me. He doesn't endorse it and say, yeah, Tom, go back and do it again. I don't do any of that crap now. It interferes with my spiritual growth. But let me tell you, if you're holding on to some money, property, or ideas, and if you're holding on to anything of that nature, you're going to have a hard time with recovery. You may want to examine if there's a difference between activity and action. That's up to you to decide. Your heart will tell you, though. You can rely on your heart. Don't rely on your brain. Send it out to vacation for a while. It ain't working anyway. That's what I had to do. And your brain will come back. You know what your brain did? Your brain puffed up my ego. Guess where it got the nourishment to puff up my ego? It stole it from my soul and fed my ego. And that's how I got the hole in the soul. My sponsor said, send your brain out. It ain't working. And the brain went out on vacation for 30 days and it came back. And the ego was shrinking down. It wasn't being fed. The brain wasn't robbing the soul. And the soul was getting healed. It was luster, you know, luxuriously healthy when the brain came back. And the brain went down, took one look at the ego and said, well, I can tell you ain't hiring. You look pretty thin, you know. When the brain went over and looked at the soul and said, wow, it looks like you could use your help. You're waxing pretty healthy. See? The soul said, yeah, I could use some help. Brain says, what do you want me to do? He says, go find me somebody to work with. That's the proper use of the brain. Oh, I have a good brain, Tom. I'm sure of it. I am positive of it. Most of you have excellent brains. But you can't use it. Yes, I use my brain all the time. You think you do? Shut it off. Hit the off switch. If you can't shut it off, then your brain is using you. You are not using your brain. The person in charge is in charge of the off switch and the on switch. Shut it off. I couldn't until I learned to pray. I learned to pray. It's that simple. Oh, Tom, I can pray, but I can't do that meditating shit. Yes, you can. No, Tom, my mind wanders. I just can't do that meditating shit. I used that lie before you did. You did? Yeah. How do you meditate? Did you ever see a guy you really liked? And did you think about him three or four times during that day, later? During that day. Yeah. That's meditation. So you knew how to meditate. Now we're going to teach you how to change the subject. So don't say you can't meditate. You can't change the subject. That's but meditate you can. So you only got a half a battle, not a whole battle. See? How do you know? Because that's what they did with me. It's my experience. Yes, I would see some girl and I would think about her all the day. See? So I'm not telling you about something I read in the book. I'm telling you about something I did. Why do I feel all this guilt, Wally?
Wally says, because your idea of God is too little.
That's your idea of God. I don't know where you got it, friend, but that's your idea. And I'm telling you what it's like. You got all your crap piled up, and you got your crap piled up 4 feet high. And your idea of God is 3 feet high. And a 3 foot God cannot handle 4 feet of shit. That's what I'm telling you. So, man, what a theological concept. You need a bigger idea of God. That's what you need. A bigger idea of God. I said, I barely got this adult's version of God now. Now you tell me I need a bigger idea of God. Where did I get that? He says, you can borrow mine. This is real AA. He's big enough for both of us. And while he was sober about 16 years at that time, he's 44 years sober now. He looks like he's 84. He looks like he's about 64. And he moves like he's 54. Him and his wife of 66 years went last winter to Belize in Central America. 84 years. To do a little missionary work for his church. Say. Yes, I still want what my sponsor has. Man, he don't have no rust and no dust. My kind of a guy. No rust and no dust. He just keeps on moving. Keeps on moving. See? I like to look at his eyes. You can see the light. You can see the serenity. You know what I'm talking about. They can look at you. They don't look through you. They stop right at your eyes. They don't say anything. You feel them. You don't really hear them. You know what I'm talking about. You feel it. And it bypasses the brain and goes directly to the heart. And then you know that you're alive. One heart talking to another heart. It's that simple. It's that miraculous. It happens to grown drunks who slept under bridges and embezzled money and did all that stuff. Why? My God is so big, I cannot offend him. Hell, lady, I can't even offend you without your permission, and you probably won't give it, Steph. It's that simple, isn't it? I can't even offend you without your agreement. And you won't, because you don't want to feel bad. I know that. Where I get, I can offend the power that made the Rocky Mountains. What do you call those? They named me Thomas Wright. I went out to Denver, got a Jeep, and went down in the floor of the Grand Canyon and put my hand on the side of one of them. I forget what they call them. Anyway, most of them are the stones worn out. And just a column standing up there, almost red in color. I put my hand on the side and looked up into that blue sky and says, Tom, are you big enough to offend the power that made this stone thing? I don't know the name of. I says, no, I ain't big enough to offend the power that made that stone thing that I don't know the name of, but he knows the name of it, you know. And I'm looking down at puny little me. And I'm not even big enough to offend you. Where'd I get out? I can offend God. Like God, some little peeune, get even. Asshole, that's not God. You know, that's me. You know? Stop putting your characters on God. That's me. Well, it used to be me. And I can go there. Bridget touched on it. If I forget one thing, I got a daily reprieve too. Daily. Now, being sort of goofy, I would expect after 20 years I should get a weekly reprieve, you know. But while they explained to me, you would screw up the other 6 days. So God don't hand it out that way. It's that simple. I'm going to share a little thing that happened to me recently, and I'll shut up. I was half asleep. I was in a plane over Chicago. It was 2 days before Christmas, 23rd. I was thinking about my life. And I remember my brothers and sisters, and then I remember, of course, they left. You know, things that are important in your life, they change. You know, they don't stay the same. We think they are, but and we hook our lives to that shit. But they left, and then the kids I met in grade school, you know, they left. And the boys I met competing in sports, and the girls were starting to get little bumps in their shirts and all that stuff. And you got to have a dance with them, you know, and all that. And they all left. And if you didn't make the team and all, you're going, or if you didn't get the prize, you know, it's a tragedy. And all those things come and go, mostly go. There I am, thinking everything's gone. Job gone, wife gone, money gone, mind gone. Everything's gone. Everything. And like I'm looking into a stage and the lights are off. And back deep in the stage is a tall figure. And I say, and who are you that you're left when everything else and everybody else is gone? He said, I am he who you have sought all your life. I said, could you be God? He says, that's your name for me? That's well. Many people call me many names. If you know me by that, that's well. I says, I chose money, property, and prestige, God, and I got all those things, but I'm not happy. I thought they would make me happy. They didn't. Oh, what do you want? I says, is it too late for me to choose you? A bum with my track record. He says, Tom, I thought you never asked. I gave you free will. I could have made you choose me. But I love you enough and trust you enough that hope someday you would choose me of your own free will. I said, okay, God, I got the shot now. I choose you. What do I do? He says, go help my other kids. I said, I don't know how to do that. He says, stay in AA. I said, who do I follow? He says, you go and listen to the men and women who share experience, not theory. And their sharing of their experience exceeds their own natural intelligence. That way you know they are relying on something greater than them to carry a message of their understanding. And you watch the men and women whose work and talents exceed their own talent. Therefore, you know they are relying on something greater than them. And if you do that, you will get something greater than yourself. And then you can join them with me. And together, we will be qualified. So I came here to get it all together. And I came with you guys, and I found out that together we got it all. Thank you.